I decided to talk a little bit about the Christian's worldview as it relates to technology. A couple of years ago, Kim and I were in Kentucky, and we were fortunate enough to get to go to what's called the Ark Experience. It's there in Kentucky. Someone has built a full-size model of what the Ark would have looked like. At least we know exactly the dimensions from the outside. So they built this Ark, and it's fascinating. It's really, really impressive to look at. And we went inside, and they talked about all of the things that Noah might have done in order to be able to keep all of those animals on that boat. I was really fascinated that they talked about the technology that they know existed during the time of Noah, and how you could have used the wave action on the boat and it rising and lowering in the water to flush out whatever gases might have built up in the boat just from the animal's waste. That was just one example. There were a lot of examples, and they had cages that were built in to the inside. Now, of course, we don't know what the inside of the boat looked like, but they demonstrated, I think, pretty conclusively that the technology that was available to Noah would have allowed him to have one of every species of animal inside the ark. Now, you know, if you're going to put one of every species, you don't have to put the biggest elephant inside the ark. You just need one of the species of elephants, and you could get a small example of an elephant, just like you could get a smaller example of a giraffe. Not every giraffe is huge. Some of them are smaller. But what it impressed upon me was that Americans' view that we have developed technology, and we're the first people that ever developed technology, is just not true. Technology has been around for a long, long time. And when we think about technology and the impact that it has on Christianity and the impact that it has on our lives, we sometimes think that we're the first people that ever had to deal with this. You know, we have to deal with the impact of the internet and the impact of the telephone and all of the things that are a part of our lives. You know, we're the first generation that really had to deal with the impact of television and the impact of instant communication. And we get the impression that our lives are very different than the lives of the people that are around us. Now, the second kind of observation that I had made was concerning the Amish. The Amish are very careful to say that they try their very best to eliminate technology from their life. They don't want to be slaves to technology. And, you know, so you see them going down the road in a horse-drawn buggy, and they have gas lamps on those horse-drawn buggies. Some of them have batteries on the buggies, and they have electric lights. But they say that they avoid using technology because they think technology is somehow sinful. They would never own a tractor to plow their fields. They do it with a horse or a mule, but they still use technology. I mean, they're not averse to using steel plows. So it's funny to me that they have a cutoff point for technology. And they say technology from the 18th century is fine, but after that, somehow there's something sinful about the technology that's around us. Has anybody else made those kinds of observations or similar observations?
Well, in terms of the Amish, yeah, I mean, every generation has some technological advances, and somehow they've drawn a line. But do they really say that it's sinful, or that using it would cause you to sin? I think there's a difference. And so my understanding is that it's more of a cautionary, you know, not to go down that path, because it will take you further away from God or further away from your spirituality. And there might be a little bit of wisdom to that. You know, sometimes I think we get diverted by anything. It doesn't have to be technology or technological advances. So that's just a thought. I don't know. From what little I've studied about the Amish, I'm not sure that they would say that using, you know, a tractor is sinful per se, but doing it differently than they have always done it or have done it for generations could cause you to sin. And so they avoid it. And so that's my understanding. I may be incorrect, but that's my understanding.
From some of the things that I've seen about the Amish is that they actually don't want their kids reading outside books. So it's okay to read the Bible, but it's not okay to read all of these outside books. And I remember one thing about one Amish guy who wanted to build his barn different, and they shunned him because he was trying to be more important than everybody else. And of course, at the end of the show, he eventually tore his barn down and built one just like everybody else, because he eventually figured out he was prideful about this idea of how to build the barn. So, but I don't understand their rum segner or whatever, where they let the kids go out for a year and do anything and come back. That doesn't make too much sense to me.
Yeah, that's their 18th year or something like that, where they take a year off and they go do whatever they want to do. And I think Kim has a good point. I probably should have considered that a little more carefully. They think it's going to lead them away from God. Maybe not that technology itself is sinful.
And that's what I was thinking, is what we do with these things, like with Zoom. People use it for the wrong thing, you know, social networking and all of this. They make some of these things sinful by the things they do with them. I mean, but we're using it for the good. You know, it's just crazy.
Well, that's a good distinction, Carolyn. And you've kind of made the point that I wanted to make with this discussion, is it's not the technology itself that's sinful, it's the use that we make of the technology. Let me very quickly talk about kind of the issue of technology. You know, I started by saying we sometimes think that we're the first people that develop technology. And that's just not true. Technology has been around ever since early in the book of Genesis. If you look at Genesis 4, verse 16 talks about Cain went out from the presence of Jehovah, dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. After he'd killed his brother, then Cain is driven out. And it was Cain's family that eventually developed technology. If you read through the genealogy, you get Cain, and then you get Enoch, then you get Mahujael, and Mahujael begat Lamech. Lamech took two wives. One was Ada, the other was Zillah. Ada bare Jabal. He was the first, or he was the father of such as dwell in tents and have cattle. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all who handled the harp and the pipe. And Zillah bare Tubal-Cain, the forger of every cutting instrument of brass and iron. And his sister's name was Naama. So this is, this sounds really very basic in terms of technology, but learning to use a steel plow is a huge change. And learning to use steel cutting instruments or iron cutting instruments, this is technology. And it's been around since just very shortly after creation. So I asked the question, can you think of examples of using science or technology to accomplish things that God disapproves of or approves of? So if you can think of examples for approved uses of technology or disapproved uses of technology, and Carolyn talked about Zoom and I guess the internet in general, it can be a wonderful technology. It's a lot faster than the technology that the apostles used, but the apostles went on sailboats, sailing ships, and that's a development of a technology in and of itself. It's as groundbreaking at its time as the internet is in our time. Can you think of any other examples of technology and how it might be a good thing or a bad thing?
It goes all the way back to fire. Fire is a good thing if it's in a contained situation. It's a good thing if you're stampeding all of the animals over a cliff so you can get your winter harvest. It's a bad thing if you burn somebody's house down with them in it. So it's not really the technology. It's what people do with it.
Okay. Good point.
Well, wasn't the printing press was one of the greatest things that's ever been invented? You can print something good or you can print something bad. It was made to, they helped to print the Bible and get it, the word out to millions of people now, but it also used to print Playboy magazines.
True. Good point, Jane. the movable type printing press. The first book that was printed on a movable type printing press was the Bible, Gutenberg. And like you say, it's the uncontrolled proliferation of technology that usually gets us into trouble. And I'm not immune to the feeling that sometimes I wish I could go back to a time when we didn't have computers and we didn't have the internet and we didn't have all of the things that we have, because people relied on each other more. And we read books. You know, when I first started preaching, I had thousands of dollars invested in books. And Kim was always getting on me because I was buying more books. We were book poor, and I made some bad decisions. And now I don't own those books. I have it all on a hard drive, and I can search it instantly. I can find whatever I need. Any other examples that just really strike you as being sort of problematic?
The fermentation of fruit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fermentation to produce alcohol. How is it a good thing?
Medical use.
I'm sorry, Ann?
Medical uses. Alcohol is good medicine.
Okay.
It was fermentation brings out a lot of vitamins. It is good for people like sauerkraut and like that.
That's true. That's true.
Vinegar is very good for you.
Yeah, Matt, you were going to say something.
Yeah, like you said before, wine helps in certain areas just because it's clear. It used to be cleaner than water, I think I'd heard. And so that was why it was used.
And I didn't think about what Jane said, that sauerkraut is just fermented. What is fermented?
Cabbage, I think.
Cabbage?
It's cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's funny. I didn't think about that as being an example of fermentation. But it, you know, you can ferment cabbage, turn it into sauerkraut, and it's a preservative. So it's a way to preserve food.
In the little ice age, when they had potatoes and grains and stuff that wouldn't ripen and whatever, that was one of the things that they were able to still do with it, was ferment it for some food value, you know.
And fermented foods they're very healthy for us. So that, I think that was a good example. Another example that I thought of is ancient and modern weaponry. You know, it's like anything else. It can be used for good or for evil. And so, you know, but weapons have been around since the beginning of time, since, you know, like you said, since Cain's family was forging weaponry.
Yeah, if you look at Genesis 11 real quickly. The Tower of Babel, or Babel, is an example of technology. They learned how to make bricks. And I've always heard that one of the great advances that made the Roman Empire what it was because the Romans learned how to make cement, make concrete. But it was the development of bricks that enabled them to start building. And it just seemed like immediately people found a way to use bricks for an unholy end. They wanted to build a tower that reached to heaven. They could make a name for themselves. And that was not what God wanted to have happen. First Samuel, the 13th chapter, is a record of, well, let's just turn over and read First Samuel real quickly. 1 Samuel 13, verses 19 and 20. The Israelites always had trouble with the Philistines. The Philistines tended to be concentrated along the coast, and they were always kind of a thorn in the side of the Israelites. And one of the things that the Philistines did was they sought to control access to people that knew how to make swords or spears. And it's interesting, if you read in the King James translation, it calls them fullers. These were the people that knew how to make swords and spears and how to sharpen them. And so in order to control the Israelites, they controlled who could learn how to sharpen swords and spears, who could be fullers. And they wouldn't let the Israelites know about that technology. So it's using technology to control someone else. In the early part of the Industrial Age, England tried to control the technology that would enable other countries to learn how to build machines that could do certain things. And it turns out that they couldn't control the access to the machines. Eventually, the word got out, but they used technology, just the technology that would enable you to make cloth. They used that as a weapon. Well, yeah, go ahead. Somebody had a comment.
I don't know who that was, but I'll make a comment. You know, sometimes we think that, and it is true that the computer in our time has changed our world. There's no doubt about that. Our world is significantly changed because of that. But actually, the technology, if you go through history, the technology that is probably credited by most historians as making the biggest difference in a population at any given time is the cotton gin. And that changed the world and agriculture so dramatically. So sometimes I think, and probably even more so by comparison to the computer, how it changed the economy of the world. And so I think that we do kind of slip into a mindset that we have a very unique situation, when in reality, technological advances have been just part of the human experience. And it's just that our technology that we have now is different than the technology of yesterday. But probably the most significant, as I understand it, technological advance of mankind was the cotton gin, and it changed the world's economy quicker than anything else, even the printing press. I think printing press, when I did a little bit of study on this, but it's been years,
But the printing press was number two.
Right. Where was gunpowder, interestingly?
It was on the list for sure. And computers were on the list too. So it wasn't that long ago that I did this. The gunpowder was definitely on the list. But I don't remember. But I was impressed that the cotton gin topped the list. And then I believe the printing press came in number two by whatever historians were ranking technological advances that changed our culture and changed the world dramatically in a very short period of time. And I would imagine that when the cotton gin was developed, there were probably a lot of farmers and Christian farmers and, you know, people who really struggled with that and really struggled with, well, do we go down that path? Do we try to make things faster, or is this the way God intended it to be? You know, I think it wasn't your grandfather that said, if God intended me to fly, he'd have given me wings. And I think your response to him was, well, he didn't give you wheels, but you drive around in a car. He didn't put wheels on you. So, you know, we all have to make these judgments for ourselves on what we and how we use technology and whether or not God approves or disapproves of a particular technological advance. Just a thought.
Excuse me. Go ahead, Kim.
Oh, I'm finished. I just kind of ended it with, that's just my thought.
I had my great grandmother who lived back in the wilds of Arkansas. Her husband went to in a wagon up to Springfield, Missouri. And when he came back, he brought back a cook stove, an iron cook stove. And it was the first one in Newton County. So I guess they all used hearths at the time. But her father, who lived with him, who would be my great-grandfather, would not allow her to have it in the house because he was afraid that it would give the kids iron poisoning if she cooked on it. So I don't know if it ever ended up in the house or not, but it's really interesting how new technology came by, and some people accepted readily, others refused to accept it, fought against it and lost, of course, but interesting things that come around. I've always thought automobiles were one of the biggest advances, but there's so many things that have improved our lives. How in the world can you rate them? It's pretty difficult.
Yeah, some historian, when I was reading this, some historian had, and a group of historians had rated it, and the automobile was definitely on that list, high on the list too. Yeah. But I think that's the point is, and Dean has made this observation because I think his grandfather made this observation one time and said, he was telling Dean, he said, I courted Nana in or Mama is what they called her, courted Mama in a horse and buggy. And then I saw a man land on the moon and walk on the moon in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty dramatic change in the span of a person's life in our technological advances. It's just something fun to think about. But I kind of took it off point. But I think that you're right, Ron. People think, well, is this right for us to use or not right for us to use?
And I don't think that is demonstrated any more clearly than when we think about the Zoom technology that we use to conduct our assemblies. There are some folks who say you should, that this is reducing assembly to what they call, in condescending terms, they call it the Sermon on the Couch instead of the Sermon on the Mount. And I think there's an unreasonable unwillingness to recognize what we can accomplish with technology. And people, I think, are afraid of technology when they shouldn't be. They're, technology can be abused. There's clearly a potential for abuse. But I think we just need to learn how to harness technology.
Dean?
Yeah.
Part of the human intellect is to find an easier way to do something, a better way to do something. And that leads to technology, or leads to, my father once told a kid to shovel the sawdust into the wheelbarrow, and he'd shove the shovel in, and then he'd walk 5 feet, put it in the wheelbarrow, and go walk back over to the pile. And my dad showed him that you move the wheelbarrow where you are, and you save those 10 steps. I mean, technology is just what our mind is conceiving, and so it is either good and follows what God wants you to, or it's evil, or leads to evil.
Yeah, it can. And Kim has made the observation before that, you know, for many years, HR departments were reluctant to let people work from home because they thought, well, they're really not going to work as much. And then the pandemic hit, and it's unfortunate, but what happened in the pandemic, so many people started working from home, and lo and behold, what we discovered was they got more done because they were working from home. And I realized that there's some disadvantages to it. There's some advantages to it. We just need to learn how to work with it. We don't need to be slaves to technology, but I think we do need to learn how to use technology. And that's one of the points that Charlie was making this morning in Bible class. You know, a lot of what Jesus did was to just make people aware of the fact that God was here. And then it was the words that really made the difference. And I do believe that the biggest danger of technology is that we become insulated and isolated from each other. And we never want that to happen. So, you know, to their credit, the elders have always wanted to avoid making our worship something that you watched, like you would watch a television show. They wanted to guard against losing the relationship element of our assembling together. And so they've really struggled to come up with ways to make our worship and even our Bible classes like this, to make sure that they're interactive. And I respect that a great deal. And I think they've done a really good job of that.
Dean, could I ask a question?
Sure. Go ahead, Ann.
I've had to deal with this, with the criticism of meeting like this on Zoom. But I always told them, you know, where I am and the congregation that I'm with, I have seen us come together more now than it was when I first arrived in this area. And I think that's very important because so many places are coming apart. But it seems to me that our group has been able to stay together and actually become closer to one another. And to me, that's important. So I don't know what else I can say other than it's been better for me.
Sure. And I think we have to sometimes we have to learn how to use technology. And we've gone through struggles. We're not immune to struggling with this. But I do think that we've exhibited the willingness to look at the technology and use it to the best of our advantage and use it well. And if something works, we keep trying to improve it. And if it doesn't work, then we stop. But we don't recoil in horror from technology just because it's technology. And I think Anne is right. It also needs to be said that we've been blessed with some people who are very good at using technology, among them Ted, who's very good at kind of learning how we can use the tools that we have to their best advantage. And I appreciate that a lot. And I know a lot of congregations don't have a TED like we do. So it's much harder for them to harness the technology than it has been for us. And I appreciate everything that Ted has done to make this work.
I think Anne makes a really good point. It's how we've used it. I think taking it a step further, one thing that I've noticed, and I'll use Facebook as an example. Sometimes I kind of made a decision a long time ago that the way I choose to use Facebook is to try to post uplifting pictures, things that make me happy, you know, grandkids stories, things like that, and not dive into politics. And if I do anything religious, I try to make sure that it's uplifting and not harsh. And I did notice that a lot of friends who are Christians, especially during the election cycle, posted things that I felt like were not very Christ-like. And, you know, when you're sitting behind a computer and at a keyboard, there's a little bit of protection and anonymity there. And you're not really face to face with people. And so people feel like they can say things that they wouldn't normally say to someone's face and can be controversial and harsh. And I think as Christians, we need to really guard against that. And we need to remember that using technology and social media and Zoom and all of these kinds of things, we are still supposed to conduct ourselves in a Christ-like manner. And we're supposed to still represent our relationship with God in an uplifting manner. And does that make sense? I think that sometimes, you know, and yeah, just especially during the election cycle, that it was pretty brutal. And I saw some Christians not conduct themselves in a very Christ-like manner. And through the pandemic too. I mean, people taking sides on issues and saying things that are not intended to, or I don't know what their intention is. I can't judge their intention, but we're not building people up and building them for the better and not representing a Christ-like attitude. And I'm sure I've been guilty of that. And in fact, one time I was sent a message from a friend for me to clarify something that I had posted, and they found it offensive. And I certainly didn't intend for it to be offensive at all. And so I think sometimes we can, it can be dangerous if we're not careful, is what I'm trying to say. And again, I want to echo what Ann said and what you have said. I think as a church and as an eldership, we've done a really good job of trying to manage the technology that we have available to us. And through the expertise of people like you and Ted and Jerry and the people who have helped us with this technology.
Dean.
Yeah, go ahead, Wes.
I just had a question. What do you think was invented first, the bolt or the thing that it was used on? The stove or what? I seen my old grandma had one of those stoves like Ron was talking about, and I never seen a bolt or a nut in that stove. And that thing was put together, the legs kind of latched in there, you know. So at what time did they decide we're going to make this faster and build more if we got bolts and nuts? And when did all that start, do you reckon? I know that's tough.
It's a good question, Wes, and I have no idea.
I'm out of line, probably. I have
no idea. Do you find a use and then build the machine, or do you build the machine and then discover, hey, this is cool?
I
don't know the answer to that.
Then you had to have a wrench to fit that nut when you, which one was made first, the wrench, the tool?
Yeah, it's a good point. Sometimes we develop technology. We develop technology to enable us to accomplish an ungodly goal. And I'm thinking about the morning after pill. We develop a technology that lets us kill a baby conveniently. And that's a technology that I don't think we should have pursued. And, you know, there's a whole field of bioethics and is there technology that we should not use? We have the ability to use stem cells that we get from aborted fetuses. Now, we also get stem cells the umbilical cord. But my understanding is that the most useful stem cells that we have, we learn to get them from aborted fetuses. So should you pursue abortion in order to obtain the technology, or should you avoid the technology completely? And you know, that even played into the development of vaccines to deal with the COVID virus. Some of the vaccines were developed and then they were first tested on stem cells. They weren't developed from the stem cells. They were developed independently of the stem cells, but then they were tested on the stem cells. How do you draw some conclusion about whether we should be pursuing that kind of technology or not? I'm not sure that I know the answer to that. I can say that a lot of the medical technology that we still use was developed in the Colosseum when gladiators were killed. Now, I would never advocate having gladiator fights so that we could develop some technology that would enable us to treat traumatic injury. I would never advocate for that. But that is kind of an outgrowth of what was going on in the Colosseum. Let me get Carol first. Carol, go ahead.
I was just going to say that anytime anybody or any technology allows you to devalue somebody's humanity, it's wrong. That's what bullies do. That's what Putin's doing right now. He's devaluing these people's humanity.
Well, I was going to say, at least they were working for the good with the stem cells and so forth, but I don't know if there's any other way to work with it. I don't know, but it was intended for good. It wasn't intended for any evil purposes, but it has been used that way, I'm sure, because anybody, they make poison and stuff to kill bugs, but they can also kill people. So it depends on how you use it again. That's the main thing, I guess. We wouldn't have a lot of cures for illnesses if they didn't invent something and they have to get material and know how to use it. I'm not advocating it because I just don't, but I'm just saying their intentions were good. That doesn't make it right or wrong either, I suppose, but it could be used for bad.
Yep. Somebody else had a comment. You know, a lot of what we know about the treatment of cold weather injuries was knowledge that was gleaned from the atrocious experiments that the Nazis performed on Jews, exposing them to cold. And I would never advocate for that. And some people would say, look at where it came from. Don't use the technology. Don't use the knowledge that came from those unholy experiments, those atrocious experiments. I must confess, I don't have a real coherent answer for that. And we just
they use animals.
Well, that's true.
In tests and things, and there are people who even don't want you to use the animal because you're, you know, but the animals, God put them here for a reason for us to use. I don't believe he put the human here for a reason to use for the same purpose.
Well said. That's not an excuse to abuse an animal, but the animal is here for our use. And when we developed the atomic bomb, there were a lot of people that said we should never have tried to develop that technology because of the awful devastation that was wrought. At the same time, that allowed for the development of nuclear energy. So there are peaceful uses there are aggressive uses. And I'm not here to argue whether dropping the atomic bomb was warranted, that a discussion for another time. But we just have to come to, as Christians, we have to come to an understanding of what technology is and how we ought to be involved in it. Should Christians be researchers at the forefront of doing vaccine research, where vaccines are tested on stem cells? I don't know the answer to that question. Everybody has to come to an understanding of that. And I realize I've not given you a hard and fast rule that says X means it's okay, Y means it's not okay. They're just giving you a lot of things to think about. And I hate to admit it, but next week we're going to talk about science. And in some ways, when we talk about science, we're going to encounter the same kinds of difficulties. There may be some science that we shouldn't pursue.